God, I can't.
I don't understand how you can do political commentary so much and not know the, like, just the basics. Like, the basics of, like, psychology or political science or economics or just, like, really, really, really basic, like, high school level things. Yeah. So this is good, no? It's good that he's doing this in front of a camera. Well, yeah, but he's had strong opinions on a lot of economic policy and everything before, so to not even know, like, the basics of it. I mean, theoretically, if he's, like, copy-pasting somebody else's opinion that he believes is respectable, like, that's okay, but I don't know, that's kind of spooky. I think that this guy probably assumed that, like, John Stewart would know, like, what an externality is, or wouldn't make a statement like, economics isn't about making society better, it's about returning money to shareholders. Like, for somebody to make a statement like that, you have to be fairly either ideologically captured or just very uninformed about just the broad field of economics, I think. Last week, comedian and political commentator John Stewart published an interview with Nobel Prize-winning economist Richard Thaler, where Stewart revealed that despite his nearly 30 years as a prominent commentator on American politics and policy, he has no idea what economics actually is. Stewart ostensibly brought Thaler on his show to explain what the field of behavioral economics is, but as Stewart's misrepresentations and misunderstandings piled up, Thaler quickly found himself in the position of defending and explaining basic economics, the kind of things many of us learned in introductory college classes. In one of the more egregious examples, Thaler began explaining how behavioral economics might influence laws or regulations to address climate change by pointing out that most economists, in accordance with standard economic theory, believe that the optimal response to excess carbon dioxide emissions is a carbon tax. Before his guest could get any further, Stewart laughed disbelievingly and argued, "May I suggest that that's incorrect?" adding that the minute you put a carbon tax on, people see their energy prices go up and you will no longer be serving in office politically. Sure, but this is a politics question, I guess, not an economics one. This was a bizarre non sequitur because while it's true that a carbon tax would be politically dicey, Stewart's concern about political risk is totally unresponsive to the question whether it's an economically optimal policy solution. Thaler tried to explain why economists like a carbon tax, but the moment he said that, so that it helps people behave in a socially optimal way, Stewart interjected again, rejecting the premise, but that's not economics. Economics doesn't take into account what's best for society, he exclaimed, adding that the goal of economics in a capitalist system is to make the most amount of money for shareholders. So my point is, since when is economics about improving the human condition and not just making money for the companies that are extracting the fossil fuels in the air? Oh boy, hold on. Oh boy, I'll listen to like 3 minutes of this.
Great. So let's take climate change as an example.
Great.
All economists, including this one, think that the first thing we should have done when we figured out there was climate change is impose a carbon tax.
That, wait, most economists think that?
Yes.
May I suggest that that's incorrect?
You may, but I'm included in those.
Can I say why I think it's incorrect?
Yeah, sure.
So the minute you put a carbon tax on, people see their energy prices go up and you will no longer be serving in office politically.
All right, then we're in agreement. Well, what I'm saying is if you're God or king, you know, or president, and you could say, all right, what policy should we have? Then the correct policy is the one that sets the prices to give people the incentive.
Okay.
So if we increase the cost of heating your home.
Yes.
To reflect the externality, the cost you're imposing on other people.
Yes.
Then you'll have the correct incentives to put in solar or insulate or switch to a heat pump or whatever.
Right.
We run a poll of expert economists every couple of weeks at the University of Chicago, and there is one on that. And yeah, everybody says, yeah, that would be the ideal policy.
So they're saying a carbon tax would be the thing to solve the climate crisis because rather than changing the behavior, you have to make using fossil fuels, which are the driver of climate change, so much more expensive that it changes people's behaviors because they won't change behavior on their own. Is that standard economics or is that behavioral economics?
That's the most fundamental. I feel like that's the most fundamental driver of every economic thing in the universe. People respond predictably to economic incentives, like the most basic fundamental thing underlying any possible thing. Given two equivalent products, all else equal, one is more expensive than the other. What will people choose? The cheaper one. Like,
well, that's standard economics.
That's standard. Feels behavioral, but that's standard.
No, because...
Oh, God. I can't...
I don't understand how you can do political commentary so much and not know the... Like, just the basics. Like, the basics of, like... psychology or political science or economics or just like really, really, really basic, like high school level things.
It's standard because it's just changed the price. And then it's the alternative is we say you're not allowed to have, we can't have cars get less than such and such gas mileage.
Right. Which we've done.
We have, right. So we have lots of regulations.
Okay.
We essentially don't have a carbon tax.
So the way we do it is, so standard economics, what they say is we have a series of either incentives or regulations. So it would sort of be...
But this is good, no? It's good that he's doing this in front of a camera. Well, yeah, but he's had strong opinions on a lot of economic policy and everything before. So to not even know like the basics of it, I mean, theoretically, if he's like copy pasting somebody else's opinion that he believes is respectable, like that's okay. But I don't know. That's kind of spooky.
A mix of is we have a series of either incentives or regulations. So it would sort of be a mix of subsidies and regulations. And that is how we will manage the energy market while also keeping an eye on trying to reduce emissions. And that's how economists would.
Isn't all economics behavioral? What's the difference? True. Actually, I don't actually know. I feel like behavioral economics, doesn't it try to study things that maybe you wouldn't predict just through like pure ultra economics market things? Like people might value a thing in a way that would be difficult to account for economically. So what I just said all else equal, you can buy product A or product B, but B is cheaper than A. Well, you'd obviously buy B. But then let's say a bunch of people are buying A because A was made in a green factory. Oh, well, people are making a different choice, they're valuing it differently. I feel like behavioral economics is studying like those types of like psychological factors that might, that basically change the way that people value things. It's not just like a strict like dollar amount. I don't know why let's just look it up. It's a study of the psychological factors involved in decisions on individuals, institutions, how these decisions deviate from those implied by traditional economic theory. I think my answer is, yeah. Concerned with the bounds of rationality of economic agents. Behavioral models typically integrate insights from psychology, neuroscience, and microeconomic theory. Oh, also, I think when you talk about things like loss aversion and stuff. Yeah, okay, yeah. If we could flip a coin and you would either be given $10 million on a heads or you would like lose everything on a tails, even if the expected value of that coin flip was like massively positive because you're worth less than $5 million, people have a fear of loss, and there might even be like a rational way to justify it. So they wouldn't take a 50-50 coin flip to get $10 million or they were going to lose everything just because that loss aversion is so strong. But there might be ways to account for that. I don't know if this is strictly be behavioral econ, but there might be ways to account for that because like, well, let's say that you're worth $1 million and you could flip that coin. Going from $1 million to $10 million net worth is actually a lot less significant than going from $1 million to zero. So maybe there's like a way to account for like the difference in utility for the marginal utility of the next dollar earned or some bullshit or whatever. I don't know.
Design a program to solve it. So we've done that with, we subsidize solar, we subsidize electric vehicles, and we regulate the miles that they must get there, and they must have a catalytic converter. Right, all that is what you would consider to be standard economic theory.
No. So we're almost there.
I am fucking this up.
You are not. You're not. So what economists would say is we don't need all those rules and regulations. Just set the price right.
But doesn't the market set the price? Isn't that free markets?
No.
Yes, but that would be the point of carbon tax, is to make the price higher than the market would ordinarily set it, right?
The carbon tax will automatically raise the price of a Hummer, of operating a Hummer, because it only gets 8 miles to the gallon compared to some EV. So we don't have to regulate. All we have to do is get the price right. That's standard economics.
And then the market will change. But isn't that just an intervention? How is that a market? That's just the government saying, if we set a price that is unreasonable, the market will behave.
It's just setting the price so that you have the incentive to act in a way that's best for society.
But that's not economics. Economics doesn't take into account what's best for society.
Yes, it does. Yes,
what?
It does.
Wait a minute. Hold on here.
Economists know about externalities. And now here's the point I want to make. We don't have carbon taxes. Why? Because, and you started with this, so you got to the answer right away. You got to this because people hate taxes. They hate high prices. So what do we have? We have lots of subsidies. We have no taxes.
Yes. Well, we have, that's not exactly, I mean, we have gas taxes. Like if you go to California, it's very different than buying gas in New York.
Correct.
It's very different than buying gas in Minnesota. Or, you know,
that's right. But right. Even in high gasoline tax states, the taxes on emissions are still way too low compared to what they should be.
Compared to what they should be if our goal is to reduce carbon emissions.
Right.
But that's not the goal of economics. The goal of economics in a capitalist system is to make the most amount of money for your shareholders. So my point is,
he's talking about fiduciary responsibility of like a board, I guess. I mean, this guy, if he's a Nobel laureate, he's going to know way more than me about economics. I don't know if I would necessarily say like economics is trying to make society better, but like an economist is probably recommending a policy that he thinks will make things better, because the whole point of an intervention is that you think there's some, if you're talking about an external thing, when he says externality, there are some things that aren't captured or reflected in the price of a given thing. And people might be incentivized to buy a thing and there might be external harm that's done, but it's not captured in the price of the actual thing itself. So if you find a way to tax that external effect, then it can be reflected in the price. So like if it costs $5 to make a shirt with a Chinese child slave or whatever, or $10 to make an American non-slave shirt or whatever, people will buy the $5 shirt because it's cheaper than the $10 shirt. But if you put like a $15 slave tax, and now you've got the $5 shirt is now a $20 shirt, and now the American made non-slave shirt is a $10 shirt, well, now you found a way to account for that external negative effect. If you assume that slavery is a negative effect from society, well, now that you've captured that in a market way, now when consumers are shopping for things, they'll be more likely to buy the non-slave produced shirt or whatever.
Since when is economic economics about improving the human condition and not just making money for the companies that are extracting the fossil fuels from the earth. Isn't that everything else is interventionist?
Okay, so I did not anticipate.
Oh, shit, fuck. Somebody on YouTube just said, this guy is not very good at explaining the basics. I think he's about to say what I was just going to say, though. I think that this guy probably assumed that, like, John Stewart would know, like, what an externality is, or wouldn't make a statement like, economics isn't about making society better. It's about returning money to shareholders. Like, for somebody to make a statement like that, you have to be fairly either ideologically captured or just very uninformed about just the broad field of economics, I think.
That everything else is interventionist.
Okay, so I did not anticipate that my role here was going to be as the defender of neoclassical economics, but here I am.
Oh, we're here, baby.
I am here. All and, right. You know, my economist friends will be proud that I'm defending them.
All right.
So, look, there's an economist named Arthur Pigou.
Sorry, somebody said externalities don't have to be bad. What I'm thinking of more particularly would be called a negative externality. Sure, true.
Oh, Pigou's work is, I don't miss an essay.
Yeah. So, no, he died 100 years ago. But
that's what I meant.
Anyway, there are Pigouvian taxes. So in any economics textbook, it will say that if you're causing some harm, then the way to fix it is to charge you for the harm you're causing so that you will decide just the right amount of harm.
Is Pigouvian familiar with the 2008 financial crisis? Because that is not what happens.
Okay. Yeah, but like that would be the point, right? The issue was all of this run-up and all of this external harm wasn't being reflected in a market price anywhere, right? So everybody was incentivized at every single step to make a bad financial decision, whether you're talking about a homeowner getting a home that they probably shouldn't have gotten, a bank writing a loan that they probably shouldn't have written, an investment firm buying a mortgage they probably shouldn't have bought, a person selling a CDO that they probably shouldn't have put together, an investor investing in a thing they probably shouldn't have invested in for returns that were probably higher than they should have been, right? Every single actor along the way was incentivized to make a decision that was short-term profitable, but maybe represented a bad thing altogether, but that wasn't being captured or reflected in any market price anywhere. And it needs to be reflected too, because you can't just make moral decisions in a market where people are competing with each other. Imagine you think there's going to be a massive global financial meltdown related to, you know, mortgage-backed securities. And imagine you're the single bank in the neighborhood that doesn't sell those mortgages. Well, you're just going to go out of business. Your employees are going to starve, or you're going to have to fire them. They're going to go somewhere else because nobody's going to do business with you because every customer is going to go to the next bank that's going to write them a more preferential loan, right? So you're kind of like forced to participate in these bad market activities because your competitors are going to do the same.
Okay. I'm not saying any economist thinks that we have these optimal policies. What I'm saying is
that's how it's supposed to work.
That's the way any economist would have advised, you know, take any council of economic advisors before this one, because they always had real economists. They would all be saying something similar to, well, what we really should do is this. But then they would say, but it's true, boss, that people hate taxes. And if they're Republicans, they really hate taxes. But we all hate paying taxes. And so we'll subsidize EVs. We won't tax Hummers.
Okay, but the disconnect here is that the average person feels trolled by an incident like 2008, and they aren't being communicated to by academic economists, but by popular perceptions of economics. And the popular perception is literally that it's just how to make a lot of money for rich people, incidents and trolling included. Yeah, sure, there's a lot of like weird myths and dumb statements that underline that. Like I said before, like people are like, K-shaped. And like, I'm sure there's like a better, like there's a steel man version of the K-shape argument that I'm just too lazy to read into. But like in any economic situation, rich people are always going to be postured to make more money than the poor people because they're just going to have the capital. They're going to have the money to invest correctly. They're going to be able to they just have more options available. You're rich. You can do so many more things to capitalize on a good situation than poor people who might see their 401ks grow or something. But like, you know, most of their money is in wages. They don't have a ton of investments. You know, like that's it. They're not, you know, doing startup capital for businesses or expanding their own business for exciting new opportunities or markets or whatever bullshit. And then when economies crash, well, for laborers, you're kind of fucked because you just make money based on your wages. You usually don't have a huge net worth to draw from in times of economic crises to kind of like float your finances for a while. But if you're rich, you know, you can draw down accounts if you need to, assuming it's not like super bad, like you're going to be okay. If nothing bad is going to happen. And then you're going to be poised better for recovery. You can usually navigate those in more sophisticated ways by allocating money in different places or whatever the fuck you'd have to do. So like everything, rich people are always going to do better than poor people in times of gains and in times of crises. That's just always going to be the case. But for some reason, people don't think that's true. But I don't even know how you would communicate. I don't think you could ever change that. This would be like, imagine if you're kind of like an overweight dude and you've got like a ton of ultra shredded like gym friends, and they're like, we're just going to eat a ton. It's dirty bulking month. We're going to eat a ton. You can join us if you want. It's going to be awesome. And then you've got a friend who weighs, you know, 280 pounds. Like, yeah, fuck it. I'll come with you guys and we'll do it. And after like a month or two, this dude's gained like 20 or 30 pounds or whatever. He's fucking pigging out like crazy. That's not a big deal to all of his super weightlifter friends, because they're going to burn it off because they know how to manage their diet. They probably have a lot more muscle to work with. They've got a higher capacity for work. They've got training schedules. But the guy that gained 30 pounds is like, fucked. He's like, well, hold on. I was pigging out with you guys. I was like, you were, and you enjoyed it. Not as much as we enjoyed it, though. And we can get back to normal very easily. And the run up to the global financial crisis, there were a lot of normal citizens that were in houses that they absolutely should have been in, making way more money than they should have, especially if they ever sold or traded up. And they got to enjoy that. They got to sit at the table with their weightlifter friends, all the finance bros and the rich people, for a little bit and enjoy the food. But then when it came time to grind, when the global financial crisis came and fucked everybody over, well, the poor people are kind of left like, oh shit, now we're mega fucked because we don't know how to navigate these environments. We don't have the tools to be in these environments. I'm not blaming poor people for this, by the way, or people that got houses. Like, the people that got the houses that didn't belong in them should have gotten the houses. They were economically incentivized to as well. The one big criticism that I think is fair is when you're in some of these huge capital institutions and you have like public backstops for your behavior. I don't think it's fair that they can price that in. I think that's kind of bullshit, but that's a way more complicated argument.
We won't tax gas and we won't tax emissions. So, and that all goes back to the mugs, that it's because we hate losing more than we like winning. So what we'll do is we'll have all these policies where we subsidize you to do the right thing as opposed to penalizing you via prices for doing the wrong thing.